Welcome back, Left Reckoners. I'm Matt Leck. With me, as always, David Griscom. Hello, David.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. We're speaking in on the Friday in the wake of this Roe decision that we've all been expecting. And David, as you were saying off mic, like, this had been telegraphed very clearly what was going to happen here. And it actually arriving, that didn't make it land any softer.
No.
Joining us today, senior editor and reporter at The Lever, covering money and influence, Andrew Perez. Andrew's, you've seen Andrew before on Left Wrecking. Thanks for joining us again, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
So there's one reason I was really excited to have you on today, and we'll talk a little bit about another piece you have on Joe Manchin and health clinics in West Virginia, but the Supreme Court's going to be on people's minds this weekend, and there's going to be a lot of bluster in the media about the legal doctrine side of this, and maybe we should have competing legal minds posit whether this is consistent with the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, talk of a divided nation, people 50-50 split apart. And I will just say, like, I know people who, I'm from North Dakota, I know single issue, you know, anti-choice voters. But I, from my perspective, the most important thing to emphasize is the conspiracy of money behind the judiciary in America right now. And so if you could just tell us a little bit, you have this article here, Dark Money Led to This Moment. How did dark money lead to this moment?
Sure. So conservatives have been building a dark money network filled with anonymous cash. We have no idea who's been funding it. They've been building a courts network since 2005 with the idea of overturning Roe v. Wade and chipping away at the regulatory state in general. And, you know, so if you look at what happened with this case, you know, so this dark money network led by Leonard Leo at the Federalist Society, his network also funds the Republican attorneys generals, who then are the people who actually brought this case before the Supreme Court, the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization case. So, you know, they have basically like helped install these judges on the court. You know, Leonard Leo was Trump's judicial advisor. He helped pick, you know, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. And then, you know, he led this dark money network that helped build like a campaign to confirm them. And then, you know, he funds the Republican AGs who bring these lawsuits to try to get to the court. And in this case, it was the Mississippi AG, but she had a lot of backing from the rest of the other Republican AGs as well. And they've also then funded a bunch of organizations that are then filing separate like amicus briefs, which are like friend of the court briefs, effectively lobbying in favor of this of this decision and you know, providing some like legal justification for it.
It sounds an awful lot like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is basically like set up to have boilerplate reactionary legislation that different state legislatures can just submit, take off the internet and submit. Is that a decent comparison?
Yeah, no, it's definitely it's pretty relevant. You know, I think ALEC is part of like the state policy network. So are a bunch of these Leo groups. But, you know, I mean, it's not like the truth is like Sheldon Whitehouse has really been like kind of beating this drum about like what he's calling this like strategy of like a flotilla of amicus briefs. And it's, you know, you see it pretty consistently. It's not just in these cases before the court, but it's it's very, very apparent in the cases, both, you know, this abortion case, the EPA case that's still set to come. And then even the Miranda rights one where, you know, the Republican AGs helped support that as well. So it's a really consistent pattern.
Right. And so you break down two prongs of this, which is one is the placing of the judges itself. And then the other is, like you say, this amicus brief thing. Can you just give us a little history of like the Trump judges who was behind them?
Sure. Well, so Leonard Leo helped select them. And again, he's a longtime Federalist Society executive, and he actually supposedly helped pick both John Roberts and Sam Alito, too. During the Bush administration. And so, you know, you'll see the Judicial Crisis Network is sort of the central, like, public-facing arm of this group. You'll see their ads. You'll see them on TV. You know, like they get invited on as like sort of judicial experts on like ABC and CNN, even though they're not just like experts, right? They're like leading the campaign to really install these people. And so, you know, they're also then funneling, like Judicial Crisis Network has long been funneling money to other groups too, that are then, that are helping build an echo chamber to support those judges' nominations. You know, creating this kind of appearance of broad-based support for some pretty extreme judges.
Could you just give folks this? I mean, the difficulty obviously is that there is this like shadow network, but some of the forces that you're aware of and some of the players that you're aware of, I mean, where is this like motivation coming from? You know, is it solely to weaken the regulatory power of the state? Is it to bolster, you know, evangelical movements in the Republican Party? I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, there are plenty of people, like I'm just speaking here in Texas, right, who are very, very, you know, anti-choice here. But you look at even like the radical laws that were passed here, even with Republicans were fairly unpopular. Like being against abortion, even with Republicans in Texas, is not like the majority position that it might seem when you see what's playing out here. And I'm just curious if you have any insight as to like what is behind, you know, this big money push here.
Sure. Well, so, you know, there's some reporting that, so Leo is like a conservative Catholic. Most of the people involved in this are conservative Catholics. But basically they, you know, the reporting is that Leo, you know, decades ago basically realized that Republicans had lost the broader culture war. I'm not sure if that's entirely the case today, but that was sort of the motivation behind it, was like, you know, we've lost culturally. Here's one area where we can really affect change. And that's by stacking the courts. And, you know, they're doing it with the Republican Party. Like they're working hand in hand with them, right? Like the Republicans are also, you know, equally supportive of like maximalist strategies. So it's, you know, they have a really receptive audience and a team they can really work with. You know, you see it on the Democrats have their own kind of dark money network. They literally only formed like a few years ago, like during the Trump era. That's when they decided they really needed their own network. But, you know, when you have senators like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who, you know, don't really care for anything that, you know, might look like party unity, they just don't care about it. They, you know, they're freelancing all the time. It means that money, like, it doesn't matter how much you have. It's worthless. It doesn't do anything. You know, you like this team is really like, not just, you know, raise the money and put the money in, but they've like created a strategy for like really operationalizing it.
And I just want to add as a side note here, you know, about this decision and this entire movement is like something you said there, I think is really clear, right? It's like, you know, donors going into this are saying like the right has lost the culture war. And I think it's very fair to say, like, I wonder, you know, how true that is, but understand like where that, like, that kind of thought process and the action that's falling with it is inherently anti-democratic, right? Saying like, we've lost the people, so we need to find a way to subvert democracy, subvert the ballot, so that we can get the things that we want into play.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you look at this court, like a bunch of the judges were also picked by presidents who lost the popular vote. So it's a fundamentally anti-democratic court. And I mean, you know, you even see that in the decisions today, right? Like, or in the abortion decision, where they basically are like, we can't be influenced by public opinion. Mm-hmm. It's a blatant, you know, just middle finger to the actual people of this country.
And like, I mean, you know, not to editorialize too much, but it's just like, this is one of those things I think is important. Like this stuff should horrify you, one, on just the general assault on human rights and people's personal sovereignty. But two, just like recognizing that there is extremely organized and powerful forces out here that are effectively saying, we want to take important decisions outside of the public arena and make those use the parts of our government which are the least responsive or affected by politics as the vehicle to do that. Like, that's a very, very frightening you know, moment, not just because of what it's doing right now, but what that really does mean for the future is taking away our freedom and our ability to be able to influence politics through this kind of shit.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, definitely. And, you know, I guess I should like emphasize the, you know, these groups are funded by like tens of like donations that really come in like $10 million at a clip, mm-hmm. $10, $20 million. And, you know, when we say dark money, it means like we'll never know the donors unless they, for some reason, just out themselves, or if it was made by like another nonprofit that eventually has to disclose. That's like does not happen with these groups. They really, it really happens very rarely that you ever find any money coming in. And if you look at, you know, we were able to trace some of the money coming into the Judicial Crisis Network and its new parent organization called the Concord Fund. But the only money we've found coming in is from other dark money groups, including one run by Leonard Leo. You know, Leo has this group called Rule of Law Trust that literally just gave $20 million to them, or $21 million in 2020. And that group is purely funded by literally only donations above $20 million, like between $20 and $35 million. And we have no idea who brought it. And like, you know, quite obviously there are very, very, very few people in this country who can afford to do that. There's very few businesses that can just drop that on court fights. So, you know, it's a real kind of whodunit as to who funded this, but you know that it's coming from just obscenely wealthy interests.
Yeah, let's just do an imaginative experience. Like, let's say you are one of these extremely rich Catholic freaks that wants to control you know, women and a whole bunch of other things, and you interface with the Concord Fund or the 85 Fund. Walk us through that experience a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think my general understanding of how this money comes in is that it's given specifically by sources that will never have to disclose it. Like it's designed intentionally, right? It's not like they're not like having the money come from like you know, some family foundation. Like it all gets passed into other groups that then are going to keep your identity fully secret. And then, you know, these groups also fight to make sure that donations are kept fully secret too. And so that's, you know, I think that's probably the promise, right? It's like, you know, you guys are used to getting a 501c3 tax break. You're used to being able to deduct that. Here you can't. And because, you know, it's a more important fight than that, right? Like this is a more important fight to, you know, overturn Roe v. Wade than your tax break. I think that's probably the pitch. You know, alternatively, the other way that it might work would be pooled money from big corporate lobbying groups. But I have no intel there, but I think, you know, that's the other way you might do it. Cause a lot of those groups just don't have to actually disclose when they give out money to certain organizations, so long as they can say that it's like supporting, you know, the whatever their business interests are.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just think of like the DeVos family or these like sort of families that have a whole bunch of wealth in, and like, I mean, man, and this is how you get it active.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just saying like, again, like, you know, this has been something that I've been talking about for a long time. It's like, I hope it's no longer a personal crusade and other people start joining up on this against like the overpowered and supercharged court, that like one of the things that you have to factor in here, as you know, Andrew, is Citizens United, which beyond like being a really frightening expansion of the power of money in politics, it seems now, especially looking back at it from this moment, was a way for the judiciary to sort of continue, like to allow even more of this supercharged money that was entering into that system of government to happen, right? Unilaterally decided that wasn't something that was popular with the American public, right? And that really opened up the door for the system right now, because I'm sorry, like the appeals courts in this country, the higher up you go, the more and more reactionary it gets. And that's created in part through political failure, certainly, but also because there is this very powerful moneyed interest that is trying to support these characters.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and actually, so I think, I mean, it's my understanding that this kind of spending, like on these judicial confirmation fights, and also even just like policy fights generally, you know, they're all considered like issue spending, rather than like actual attempts to influence politics. And, you know, that's a specific carve out from a Supreme Court case like decades ago. I think it's Buckley v. Vallejo. That's like where they kind of built in this, you know, ability to crush, you know, basically to crush democracy. But sorry, I forgot what I was going to say here.
Well, let's for folks interested in this Dobbs case specifically as a case study for how this two-pronged approach. I mean, I guess we understand how the judges got there now, but how that money sort of backs up and creates the formation behind these.
Sure. So in the Dobbs case, you know, it's filed by the Republican AG in Mississippi. The Republican AGs are literally their chief financier is like Leonard Leo's Concord Fund. And it has been for going on about a decade or more, or maybe slightly less, but they've been the chief financier of it since at least 2014. And you know, then what you see, so you see other Republican AGs file briefs in support, and you also see, you know, the Concord Fund and the 85 Fund, another Leo group, donating a ton of money to groups that are getting active, filing more kind of friend of the court briefs here, like the Susan B. Anthony list, you know, this group called Advancing American Freedom, which is the new group from, you know, supposed American hero Mike Pence. You know, then there's groups like the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, Concerned Women for America, the Ethics and Public Policy Center, Family Research Council. You know, a lot of these groups get funding from some other kind of, you know, billionaire foundations, like, for instance, the Koch Foundation, the Charles Koch Foundation. But, you know, these groups, these Leo groups have been really, really big financiers of them, too.
Yeah, and I just think that's important for people to know and like a sort of understanding to get out widely that it's not just like these court cases randomly come up and right there they are spear points sort of directly sort of produced to create a political a political end basically.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when the court took up this abortion case, everyone's like, that's a ridiculous case because like it flies fully in the face of established precedent, right? Like the only reason for them to take it up was to strike down abortion laws. Cause you know, the Mississippi law that was being defended here is like a really, really extreme law where they, you know, they would ban most abortions at 15 weeks of pregnancy. It contains no exceptions for rape or incest. Basically the only way you can get an abortion now, like at least according to the Mississippi law, is that, you know, you need to be dying. Like it needs to be a matter of life or death. So it's a really, really extreme law. It was designed to challenge Roe. And that's why the court picked it up.
And it's a similar thing. You know, we talked last time you were on, we talked about this EPA case that I believe we're expecting to come down the pike and, you know, your article will link to it, but it outlines the exact same sort of, you know, formation of, where there's an agenda behind these just interesting judicial questions that are posed.
Yeah, absolutely. So that case was filed. I mean, it's sort of a consolidated case at this point because it was a many, many challenges to it. But so that case was led by Patrick Morrissey, the West Virginia Attorney General, and it has 17 other Republican attorneys general backing it. And then, you know, if you look through the people who are filing amicus briefs, you know, the new Civil Liberties Alliance gets a bunch of money from this Leo group. And you know, in that case, it's designed to really, really chip away at the government's ability to at all respond to climate change. It basically, you know, says like the idea that conservatives are trying to propagate is that the government can't respond to the federal government. The administration cannot regulate greenhouse gases. And in fact, what actually has to happen, Congress can't delegate that authority. What needs to happen instead is that Congress needs to pass individually a new law tackling every pollutant every time, you know, they decide we need to address one. So it's, you know, a ruling there, if, you know, if it's expansive, can really, really strike down the ability of not just the EPA to regulate climate change, but like every federal agency's ability to function. Like it's really designed to take power away from them, to put it to Congress so that Congress can obviously do nothing.
Right. I mean, unless you got anything more on the SCOTUS stuff, I think that's a good place to leave it. Just preview, you got this other story here, which I think is very interesting, on the Ram clinics in West Virginia. What is a Ram clinic and why is it in Joe Manchin's backyard?
Sure. So, you know, remote area medical clinics have been around for a couple decades now. You know, they were started originally to help serve communities in like really remote areas, like in the Amazon rainforest. You know, they quickly realized that there was a lot of need in the U.S. They started getting a lot of requests to help out here. And so what they do is they create these, you know, pop-up clinics that are like 2-3 day events. And they go where they're invited by like community health groups that are then going to help organize both volunteers and just find doctors, dentists, optometrists. And, you know, so what they do is they're treating people free of charge. They expect to mostly treat people who are either uninsured or underinsured. But, you know, you go to these clinics and you see just like a real cross-section of America. Like, they are, you know, people of all ages, people who do have insurance, like people who are on Medicare, people who are on Medicare Advantage plans. And, you know, the reason you're seeing that is just because dental care in this country has been carved out from the vision, have been carved out from the rest of healthcare. Like your health insurance just doesn't cover it. And even if you have a Medicare Advantage plan or a private dental insurance plan, they're usually really kind of weak, kind of meager. Like they only really, you know, might cover like an annual cleaning. And you know, everything after that, you're going to be subject to some kind of cost sharing, or you're going to be paying, you know, above a certain cap. Like you'll be responsible for everything. And it's usually only like $1,000 or $2,000. So that's why you see these clinics. And, you know, we went to the one that was in Joe Manchin's backyard. It was literally like 10 minute drive from his house.
And I mean, I will link to this story as well, but I mean, it really like puts the idea that we just carve that out. So we have to have people walking around with teeth that are cutting into their jaws and they're priced out of care is just sickening and obscene. And I mean, yeah, it's a good vision of like what we should be doing for folks and showing up with non-judgmental, I mean, care for them. Yeah, it's a great story. So I encourage folks to read it. Well, Andrew, thanks again. We'll have you back. Hopefully not on such a bleak day. but we appreciate all the work you do and the folks at The Lever.
Thanks. I appreciate it.